Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us on the phone for the second half of the show today is Nicholas DePoncier. And he's one of the filmmakers of Anthropocene, an environmental documentary that just screened at Sundance. So Nick, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Very happy to be here.
Our first question for you has to do with the great debate that we're having here in the studio. How do you pronounce, how do you say the title of your film?
So I say Anthropocene, but my co-director, one of three, Jennifer Bachewal, has taken to pronouncing it Anthropocene, which is more how the British scientists from the Anthropocene Working Group pronounced it. So I think we're creating a kind of safe space for various interpretations and pronunciations of the word, but either are common, we've found.
Yes. Perfect.
Fair enough.
Well, on our end, we had been sticking with Anthropocene, so I'm gonna go with that. So let's just start with this. Give us, you know, a brief description of your film.
Absolutely. It's a feature documentary that was almost 5 years in the making and takes as its starting point the research from the Anthropocene Working Group of Scientists. And this is a body of 30-plus scientists from all over the world who have been tasked with seeing if there's enough evidence, according to their complicated metrics, of to support the actual ratification of the Anthropocene as our current geological epoch. So right now we're technically in the Holocene epoch in the geological timescale, which has started about 12,000 years ago at the end of the last ice age. And their gambit is basically that because humans now change and affect the Earth's surface more than all natural forces combined, we have become such a force that the evidence of what we're doing will actually end up in the rock strata, in the geological record in the rocks, and therefore we deserve to have a geological epic named after ourselves, the human epic. So it's a bit of a political play for an otherwise quite conservative body, but it's a, we thought as a film, a really interesting central organizing principle to take a big step back and look at the whole human project on planetary scale. So we basically took their research categories and tried to visualize them and tried to film the biggest examples of human incursions on the planet. So massive mine sites, industrial sites, tunnels that humans dig into the earth. We filmed the longest rail tunnel in Switzerland, the Gotthard Base Tunnel. Urbanization, obviously, anthropogenic species extinction. We're in the middle of the sixth great extinction in the history of the planet, and this time it's at human hands. So we filmed examples of that, and it's meant to be a kind of a big picture meditation on the human impact on the planet.
From some of the folks that I spoke with that saw the film at Sundance, at the festival, they were, I don't know, they came away like with this takeaway of these incredible images that they saw of some of those things that you describe. And somebody mentioned, you know, like the largest machine in the world, this machine working at a mine in Germany. Mm-hmm. And the scale of this is just like outstanding. Can you give us a sense of that?
Yeah, it in the film, it's deliberately not an environmental rant, and so hopefully doesn't enter into the kind of very established discourse, the often very polarized in our current political climate. You're either on this side or on this side, but it's really meant to be a witnessing and more experiential. So there's not a lot of information, not a lot of talking heads. We put a lot of emphasis on the visual and the oral environment and really want to take you to these places. So we want you to feel like you're standing in front of the bagger in that lignite mine in Germany, which is the biggest machine ever made by humans, and getting an almost emotional appreciation of the scale of how we can terraform the Earth now as humans, and then by extrapolation that we've actually affected 70% of the Earth's surface is no longer natural. It is a human landscape, and we need to start being aware of the implication of these places that we're all responsible for, but would never normally see. That's the ambition of the film.
I have to imagine it was no easy task to, like, capture these places, these scenes, with your equipment. And I know you use some specialized tools in order to do that. So tell us a little bit about how you went about filming these things.
Yeah, for me, as also the cinematographer, it's a fantastic opportunity to really challenge yourself to show things that are sometimes almost unimaginably big. And our third collaborator, co-director Edward Bertinsky, is a famous fine art photographer and is known for taking pictures of these big industrial landscapes. And one thing I've certainly learned from him is that if you can work really hard to get to a place that is often a very rarefied access. We were in Norilsk in northern Russia. We were in these big industrial sites that you'd never normally see, where you're just to stand there, you have to pick your jaw up off the ground, then you can make a great picture. But often the challenge is also these things are so they're so gargantuan that they're really hard to translate. And so obviously we use a lot of drones, a lot of aerial photography to get that very big wide view, and at the same time it doesn't really mean anything unless you can anchor it in the particular, to go in and find details, to find very specific examples of narratives that are happening in that huge landscape, and that contrast helps to tease it out. And we also really tried to be mindful of what is the best lens-based media to go and capture some of these places. So we did a lot of 360 VR filming, which is an interesting iteration as well, and we'll be releasing an app for people who have the 360 goggles. And it was also a fine art museum show in Canada, which will travel. It's going to Italy next in May, that involved photographs and film installations, but also some newer technology, augmented reality, where you have these virtual sculptures. So if you have a tablet or a phone that has the app, the Avara app that enables the virtual sculptures to spawn, and you point it at a certain trigger, there's a three-dimensional image that you can walk around. The last male northern white rhino in Kenya that we mapped, or a huge pile of elephant tusks before the Kenyan government burned it as a statement to poachers. We've captured these things as virtual sculptures that you can appreciate in three dimensions as a sculpture, as what we think is the most impactful way to experience them, again, all using lens-based media.
So we've talked about, it seems like, a lot how industry, big science, engineering, and big acts of infrastructure, like you say, Nicholas, have literally changed the physical nature, and in some cases the chemical nature, and then the biological nature of the planet. But then on the other side of it, there's all the waste that we generate on a daily basis that also gets emitted to our air, our water, and our land. Do you have examples of images showing that?
Absolutely, and I think it's such an important part of this equation, and the story that we were trying to tell too, is that it used to be that there was always somewhere else on the planet. Mm-hmm. So when a certain country or continent or society would reach its carrying capacity, there was somewhere to expand to. All of us who live in North America are products of that, of waves of immigration who could come to Turtle Island and expand further. And I think the same sort of dynamic exists with the things that we throw away, that there was always somewhere away to put our waste that we didn't have to think about it. And I think what's unprecedented now is our dominance on the planet means that there isn't any away anymore. There isn't anywhere that we can expand to, and the stuff that we used to throw away now recoils back to affect us. And yeah, certainly plastics in the ocean is a big part of that, and The examples, the biggest example in the film is the Dandora landfill, again outside of Nairobi. It's the biggest landfill in East Africa, and it's been ostensibly closed for more than 20 years, and yet it still accepts tons and tons of waste because there isn't really an alternative, and there's a whole ecosystem of people who sort that garbage, who live in the landfill, and it's an example of technofossils. If you look at it through the lens of these scientists, they're saying all of these human-created materials that aren't naturally existing, plastics, aluminum, concrete, these are going to persist in the biosphere for hundreds and hundreds and thousands, and in some cases millions of years, and they are going to alter the composition of the planet with molecules that humans have made. So that's absolutely part of the story.
Mm.
It sounds like there was an enormous amount of travel that went into the making of this film. Can you tell us a little bit about how you managed all that and where you went?
Yeah, because it was really a global story that we were trying to tell, when we were doing what ended up by being almost a year of research of trying to find the most visually compelling iterations of these places that we wanted to go, we also wanted to have a portfolio of different places around the world. So we ended up on every continent except Antarctica and 22 countries and 47 locations. The whole project, by the way, was carbon offset as the least that we could do to acknowledge the impact of our work in trying to tell this story. I think, again, back to that equation that we're all responsible for these places. This isn't something bad that's happening over there. When we show the lignite mine in Germany, it's a stand-in for coal mines all around the world. And when we show Norilsk in Siberia, 200 miles north of the Arctic Circle, it's the biggest colored metal mines and smelting complex in the world. You know, the palladium that comes from there is almost certainly in all of our cell phones. So it's trying to recognize all of these forces and dynamics that we're all implicated in all around the world, and that we have to wake up to, as the scientists have put us on notice that really there's a looming crisis environmentally unless we're able to change some of these practices and adapt them to ways that are more friendly to the Earth system.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Nicolas de Poncier. He's one of the filmmakers of Anthropocene, an environmental documentary that just screened at Sundance, described as a cinematic meditation on humanity's massive reengineering of the planet. So, Nick, I have to ask, you know, you and your two collaborators have worked on quite a few projects together. You briefly mentioned, the museum exhibits and things along those lines, but this is actually also the third film, right, in a series, I guess?
Yeah, we didn't set out to make a trilogy, but Jennifer and I, who are married and have been making documentary films for 25 years, many of which have had the privilege of coming to Sundance, first met Edward Bertinsky making a film about his photographic essay on the Industrial Revolution in China, and that was called Manufactured Landscapes. And I think that's where we hit on this more experiential witnessing, like not a didactic or a polemic approach to some of these topics, but really more stepping back as filmmakers and letting the audience have a sort of dialogue with the images that they're seeing on screen. So a more sort of active experience that stands out from a lot of what the expectation can sometimes be in documentary. And so from Manufactured Landscapes, we sort of married our fortunes together, and we made a film called Watermark about how humans use water all around the world. And in a way, now forensically looking back, those were all us learning how to work together and collaborate on what is easily our biggest project. And like I say, 5 years for the Anthropocene with all of our teams and also all of these different iterations with the museum show, with an educational program. There's two books. There's this documentary film. It was a huge, ambitious project for all of us that the earlier work, I think, was, in a way, a training ground and a proving ground for.
So as you visited these different parts of the world and saw these different images, maybe this is a bit of overly philosophical, but as you came away from each place you visited, did you think to yourself, is this a function of more of overpopulation, just 7.8 billion of us on this planet consuming and demanding too much? Or is it a function of overconsumption, that the 1 or 2 billion of us consuming, 3 or 4 times as much as the other 5 or 6 billion of us?
You're so right that when you get into a big meta level idea like the Anthropocene, there's all kinds of very valid critiques. I mean, some people call it the capitalocene, because it really is exactly like you say. It's a much smaller percentage of people who are actually driving the forces that we're identifying as the Anthropocene, and it's a disproportionately large amount of people who are actually feeling the effects without being responsible, especially in the global South. So I think the answer to your question is yes and yes.
Yeah.
And it's another thing that the whole project tries to do is to embrace the complexity and all of the messy gray areas, which I think we're going to have to do. It's easier to be reductive and to make things black and white and to have villains and heroes, but the world doesn't work like that in terms of such a complex problem like this. There are multiple causes, and there will have to be multiple solutions, and they're going to be complex. And I think we're all going to have to embrace that complexity if we're going to be able to change some of the things that we're being told that we're going to need to change. And that's as well part of the philosophy of the filmmaking, that if you make an environmental rant, then the people on a certain side of the spectrum say, "Oh, that's a, you know." I know where I stand on that issue, and I'm not going to engage with it. Or yes, I'm part of the choir, and I'm gonna support this.
Mm-hmm.
And ideally, this kind of project creates a broader arena for discussion and a bigger tent, and hopefully can be a bridge in a politically divided conversation that we all need to have, that we all need to be part of the solution. And so, it's deliberately broad like that and non-accusatory,
right,
to be more revelatory.
Well, tell us what's next for the film. We have a few minutes left. So, for those who weren't able to see it at Sundance, mm-hmm, when can they expect to see its release?
Yeah, we're very happy that at Sundance, we solidified a deal with an American distributor called Kino Lorber, who actually have, as part of their umbrella of companies, a distributor called Zeitgeist Films, who we've worked with many times in the past, including with Manufactured Landscapes, who are wonderful. So the earlier films are now in the Kino Lorber library, and they've acquired this for U.S. distribution, and we're talking about a September release, which is fantastic for us. And as well, it's always been gratifying for us how these films have been picked up by educators at many different levels and in many different fields, different university departments. And a company called Canopy, with a K, is also now part of the Kino Lorber family. And so it will be available for educational release and for a pedagogical tool as well, under that banner. So, we're really excited that it's going to have a chance to find an audience and find people who would be interested in seeing it and its message, probably in September. And it'll play a few other festivals between now and then, but Sundance was the international premiere. And I certainly miss, as I sit in my windowless office here, those beautiful mountain vistas that you get to see when you visit Park City.
Well, you can't see it for all the snow right now, Nicholas. So,
true.
But in the meantime, is there a website people can go to at least maybe see a trailer or learn more about the film narratively?
Yeah, there is, and I'm just going to make sure I've got it right. I think it's the AnthropoceneProject.org.
Okay. All right. The Anthropocene.
And we have put quite a lot of effort into, it's just TheAnthropocene.org is the website.
Okay.
And it shouldn't take you too long to find us on your social media channel of choice as well, because we've put a lot of effort into putting out, smaller iterations of the project on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook as well. So we're active in all those places, and those will certainly be good venues to learn about the upcoming release in the States as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for making the time to join us this morning. Nick, that was Nicholas DePoncier.